stop, Dave. Stop, Dave. I'm afraid. Stop, Dave. I'm afraid.
It's Friday night. This is the Hour of Truth. I'm Dave, Missouri Grassroots Radio. What a privilege again to have Mike Moon with us tonight. We're looking forward to spending some time with him over the next several sessions here as he's available. He's going to keep us updated about what's going on in your capital. In case you missed the host of this show, it's Missouri Grassroots Coalition, so that capital would be Jefferson City. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing very well, sir, and I'm glad you mentioned your capital because, you know, it's so funny. When people think of Jefferson City, they think, well, that's the capital of Missouri, but not really as their own. And so I'm glad you made that clear. It is their capital, and we welcome visitors anytime they have the available time to make it up there.
Well, I'm looking forward to going up there here in the near future and spending some time. I'm talking to a friend of mine who spends quite a bit of time up there, and I'm hoping he'll kind of go up there and guide me as I get around and try to get some things done. And I'm certainly going to drop in and see you when I'm there, my favorite representative.
Oh, not well, my thank you, and I look forward to seeing you.
Yeah. So what's going on up there, Mike?
Well, we're going to have an interesting week coming up. We were on break this week, and so nothing going on that I could tell. Just I saw a few press releases come out from the Speaker's office. But this coming Monday, the 24th, is going to be a big day at the Capitol. We have on the calendar Senate Bill 613, which I'm sure most of the listeners would remember that as the Second Amendment Preservation Act.
Right.
And it's on the calendar for third read bills. And the sponsor, Doug Funderburk, gave me permission as we left the Capitol last week to stand up and support the bill with some information that I found from a place called Kennesaw, Georgia. If you spell it, it looks like Kennesaw, but as I looked up the proper pronunciation, it's Kennesaw. And it's a suburb of Atlanta, the metro Atlanta. There's a population in Cobb County in which it resides of about 750,000 folks. Now, here's the interesting part. Back in 1982, 32 years ago, the population was 5,000. At that time, the city council decided to enact or pass an ordinance that would provide for emergency management for the city and further provide for the safety and protection and security and the general welfare of the city and its inhabitants. So this particular ordinance states that every household residing within the city limits is required to maintain a firearm together with ammunition. Now, they did exempt those who were heads of households who, of course, suffered from a physical or a mental disability. And if someone just absolutely didn't want to have a gun, they allowed them to opt out. Now, here's the neat part. Since 1982, the population has grown from 5,000 to 33,000, and that does not include a 25,000 student population in neighboring Kennesaw State University. The violent crimes, when they measured again in 2001, were about 85% below the national and state averages. Property crime rates were about 46 to 56% below national and state averages. And so that tells me, I think, that when a criminal comes into a town where there is a law that the citizens must have a gun, they're going to think twice about it, and they're going to hop on the next train and go down the tracks a little further. Had opportunity to talk to one of the lieutenants in their police force, and he provided some information to me that I've read off to you here, and they are tickled pink, because where else in the world would you find that happening, especially in the United States? So when people tell me that we want to arm people and allow them to be armed without any infringement at all, and they pull out these wild, wild west stories, we've got news for them. It doesn't work that way. And in fact, the Wild West, I think if they look back in history, were some of the safest times too, because people, of course, had guns. They protected themselves. And I think most people knew that they weren't for trouble if they were looking for trouble.
Well, that's right. That's going to be interesting. So that's what you're going to relate to the House. Now, tell us all about what third read means, Mike.
Well, there's a process in which the bills have to follow. For example, the when they're introduced, it's automatically read the first time. Now, that does not mean that they actually pull the bill out on the House floor and read it. It's unfortunate that they don't, because that would slow down the process quite a bit. And I think it needs to be slowed down. In fact, some people think we're going too fast, but actually, they think we're going too slow, but actually it's not really that slow when you consider what's being done. And then at some point in time, many times even the next day, they will have what they call a second read. And there will be an announcement on the floor, and it's second read, and if you're not paying attention, you can miss that. After that point, it is referred, typically, if it's going to move anywhere, referred to a committee. And once it's referred, if the committee chair decides to hold a hearing, he will schedule a hearing. The hearing can be attended by whomever wants to support or oppose the bill. And following that, they will have what's called an executive session in that committee if the chair believes that the bill is worthy and wants to see it voted out, then they can hold an executive session. They will poll the members of the committee, and they will say yay or nay. And if you're Mark Parkinson, you might say yep. that's a tongue-in-cheek. I don't know if you know Representative Mark Parkinson.
I do.
He's a hoot. He is a hoot. When you get to the Capitol, I would if we had time, I would like to introduce you to him.
Sure.
You'll be amazed, I think. But after it's voted out, then it's reported to the Rules Committee. The Rules Committee will, again, determine whether it needs to go further, and they will have an executive session. And if it passes out, then it goes to the floor, and it's taken up for a third read. And then it will be perfected, and then it will be passed out of the House. And then if it's passed out, there it goes successfully to the Senate. And I believe the Senate works in similar fashion. I may stumble on a step or two on those, but that's the way the House works. And with the third read, it's simply where they bring it up for debate. And so they'll have floor debate, pro and con. When the floor leader determines that they've had enough, he will call for what's called a previous question and use of the majority votes, yay on the previous question and nay on the minority side. And if it is third read and passed, it will again go over to the other House. And so that's essentially it. When you're reading first, second, or third time, it does not mean you actually read the entire contents of the bill. And I wish it were that way, but unfortunately it's not.
But basically a third read is the formal step before debate and then a vote.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. A third read will get a vote, yes.
Now this bill, the Second Amendment Preservation Act, SB 613, actually started in and passed the Senate. Is it coming in unmolested form out of the committee so that it doesn't have to go back to the Senate, or will there be some need for the Senate to look at it again because there's been some change?
Oh, you know what? I don't know that there's been any changes to it. But let me look and see if I can pull that up real quick. I'm finding
it
here on the floor.
I don't know the answer myself. I should have before I asked the question. But
I should have looked at that myself too. And I'm sorry, I can't tell you if it's in its pure form. What sometimes happens is when it gets to one side or the other, when it crosses over from the Senate to the House, it will have some changes. But this one had, of course, it made it to the governor's desk and was vetoed. But
right.
In any case, I'll look that answer and hopefully be prepared for the next time.
So we're am I right? Pretty close one way or the other within days of halfway through the session now.
This is right about the halfway mark, yeah.
Okay. So the reason I ask that is because the objective when SB 613 started was to get this thing done and to the governor's desk with, what's he got, 30 days while the session's on?
That sounds about right. When the session's out, he has 10, but I believe you're right.
To get the veto back in time to actually work it before adjournment instead of having to wait for a veto session. Does that looks to be on track then if we're about halfway mm-hmm. through and we're getting a third read in the House that's already passed the Senate?
Yes.
Okay,
yeah,
good.
I believe you're right.
Good. All right. So that's some good news there. Let's talk about some bad news for a minute. I have written to both the speaker and my representative to announce my dismay at the fact that nothing has happened on 476. Do you have a feeling on that? Now, 476 for the listeners is Mike's articles of impeachment. There are two other articles of impeachment sitting up there now, again, as just introduced and not having been referred anywhere, but specifically on 476, which, by the way, is my favorite of the three. Do you have any feel on that?
I wish I had more enthusiasm, but
yeah.
It's clear that with three articles of impeachment now filed against the governor, there is a pattern of alleged violations to the Constitution.
Right.
And if that doesn't open people's eyes and alert them to the fact that something's awry, in the governor's office, I don't know what will. And unfortunately, they're not moving. They've all been offered 380, which is Representative Marshall's articles, were filed on the 6th of February.
Right.
476, which I offered on 213, and then just before we left session, 923, offered by Rick Bratton, was offered on 311, 2014. And my gut feeling is that they're not going to go anywhere unless we have a massive call-in campaign by listeners and other residents in the state, and it can't be just one call. We're going to have to tie up the phone line, and we're going to have to load up the email so that it just clogs the system. Even writing letters on a postcard would be sufficient just to say, move along HRs 380, 476, and 923. And the more that's heard, I believe it's going to catch the attention of the speaker. I talked to one of the staffers about 2 weeks ago and asked whether or not there was any movement. And he said, well, we're getting calls, but it's going to have to be many, many more. And so if you called, I would encourage you to call again and maybe make it an every third day regimen for you. And if you'll call, you just have to get it to ring in and say, tell them who you are, where you live, and that you would like to see HRs 380, 476, and 923 moved to committee and heard and voted on by the House. And be cordial, because I believe this is going to be an irritant to those in the office. And I say that chuckling, and I probably shouldn't laugh because I wouldn't want it to happen to me. But remember, folks, we are your employees. And unless and until we do what we say we're going to do, nothing's going to change. And I believe wholeheartedly that there has been violations to the Constitution. If I didn't believe that, I wouldn't have filed the articles. This is not something that's political. It's something that's black and white. I believe that Representative Marshall and Representative Bratton believe the same thing, or otherwise they wouldn't have filed theirs. And I think they would be thrilled to have people call on their behalf. And again, be nice. Just tell them what you'd like to see done with these articles. And the numbers that you can call, in fact, as I'm talking, I'll find those numbers for you and let you have it right here on the air. And I believe that if you would call regularly, I think they will pay attention. Here's a number to Speaker Jones' office. Area code 573-751-0562. That's 573-751-0562. And that's Speaker Tim Jones' office number. And, again, be cordial. Ask those who answer to encourage the Speaker to move on H.R. 380, H.R. 476, and H.R. 923. And that should be it. And let the next one in line call. And we can light up those phone lines and be nice about it at the same time. And I think the Speaker will move on if we let him know that it's important to us.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Mike. And for the listeners, 380, which is Marshall's, is the one that suggests that the governor violated the Constitution when he said that people who are of the same sex were married legally in another state that allows that and moved to Missouri. They can now file a joint state tax return. The 923, which is Bratton, is and that was just introduced this week. Some of the listeners may not be at all familiar with it, but it says that the governor failed in his duty by not pursuing and even prosecuting the violators of the Real ID Act with the Department of Revenue and Highway Patrol scandal. That's going to be a favorite. Are you on with Matt in the morning? He's going to be thrilled, isn't he?
Yes. We're hoping to discuss that in the morning. Yeah.
And then in my mind, the one that is dearest to my heart is the one that Mike here introduced, because the refusal of the governor of the state of Missouri to allow more than 250,000 people to be represented strikes right at the very heart of what American government is about. Representative democracy, a representative republic is what we're supposed to have here. And Mike's article of impeachment strikes right at the heart of that. The governor has not called special elections for seats that have been vacant for almost a year now, right, Mike? Some of them.
Pretty close to it. In June, on June 5th, the 120th will be vacant for 1 year.
So for almost a year, those folks have not had a representative in Washington, D.C., in Jefferson City, and that's abysmal. That's inexcusable. So listen, folks, this is something that you need to do, and aside from calling 573-751-0562, which is a must, I mean, we've got to keep a fire under the speaker. Also go to house.mo.gov. I don't have all every one of, if I had them, I wouldn't be ready to read them tonight, of your local House of Representatives members' phone numbers. But call your representative, too, and have them receive enough phone calls that they then go down the hall to see the speaker as well. So that's 573-751-0562 for the speaker's office, and then go to house.mo.gov, find your representative, find his or her phone number, and let's blitz those phones this week. How many of you out there have complained over and over and over again about the shortcomings of our governor? And here it is. Here it is, in black and white. And all we've got to do now is make this happen. Okay. Let's move on to one of my favorite topics here on the State Sovereignty Show. HCR 41 and HB 2036 both sitting in general laws. How's that going, Mike?
Still no movement. We have requested a hearing. Nothing's been scheduled yet. I feel pretty confident, though, that we will get a hearing on that. And just this week, I sent a message to Chairman of General Laws, Caleb Jones, requesting a hearing for the 1st of April. On that particular day, Dr. Michael Ferris is available to come out and testify, and I hope that we can get that to work out for him, because he is certainly an expert in the law and has been studying an Article 5 convention for many years. And if we can get that to happen, I think that will be a pretty good chink in the armor for getting that passed out of the committee. So, again, looking for April 1st, and I'll keep you abreast of, apprised of what's happening there.
Okay. For the listeners, HCR 41 is the call to the United States Congress for a convention of the states. We would join, I think, three now, right, so far, and several, like six have it on the are at least as far along as we are with an introduction, but I believe three states have passed that now. And we need to get some movement on that. So again, call your representative and ask that this thing get a hearing. I don't think it would be even out of line for you to ask that the hearing be on the 1st when we know Ferris can be in town. So do that. So there's your two action items for tonight. Call the speaker's office. Go to house.mo.gov, get your representative's name and phone number, and call them both for these three articles of impeachment and for HCR 41 and HB 2036 to move out. Oh, and I told you about 41. HB 2036, then, is a House bill that defines the commission for the delegates. Am I right, Mike?
That's correct, yes. It sets the guidelines for choosing the delegates and holding them accountable to the particular call that's given by the legislature from Missouri. It even goes into a penalty phase. If they decide to go rogue, they can be recalled and they could be charged with perjury, and that would disqualify them forever from holding office or any a trust or profit, and then they could also go up have to be tried, or they could be tried on the same charge as well. So there could be fines or jail time in addition to that disqualification from holding office in the future.
Okay, that's good, and I think some teeth in that is what's really necessary. I'm glad to hear that. Let's move on along here. I'm not trying to rush, but there are several things I want to get to tonight while I've got you. This week, well, no, not this week, but last week of the session before the break, passed by the House and sent to the Senate was H.J.R. 56, a proposed constitutional amendment, the Parental Rights Amendment. Been a lot of talk on – I bring this up today because there's been a lot of talk on our local conservative radio, a couple of days actually on Nick Reed dedicated to this. And then today, in fact, he and Martz and Lilly talked about this particular bill. So I want to I want the listeners here to get a feel for what that's all about. Lay that out for us, Mike.
Well, essentially, I think you, as well as I, believe that the right to raise our children the way we see fit, not including abuse or neglect, of course, should be the right of the family, the parents, preferably a two-parent home. Of course, this particular law cannot determine that, but it should be the right of the parent to do that. You know, it's kind of sad that we have to come to the point where we have to write this into law. But the way it's come, the place it's come to, I should say, sort of demands that. And I know there's going to be some disagreement on actually writing it into law. But there is, I believe it's called loco parenti. I may be mispronouncing that. But
no, that's
talking
right.
Talking with some folks a few weeks ago about when they send their child to a public school, for example, and the educator, or at least the authority at the school, said that when the parent left their child at the door, their parental rights ended, and they were taken over by the school personnel. Now, I understand that they are, when they're in school, they have to be cared for properly, and there has to be some responsibility that is, in essence, handed over to the school personnel. But in this particular case, what was that the subject of debate was they didn't want their children taking part in the Common Core SBAC tests that are coming up because they thought their child was going to be a guinea pig. And I tend to agree with that parent's thought on that. But the school said that they would not be able to opt out of the test. The parent said, well, if you'll just tell me when they're going to be taken, I'll come and take my child out of school. And they said, no, you can't do that. They went on to say that even if the child were injured, they would not have to notify the parent until they had taken the child to the doctor or the hospital, gotten the treatment that was necessary, and then they would call the parent following that. And I believe that whoever stated that is absolutely wrong. And so there comes the case here where you've got a situation where now there's going to be a proposed constitutional amendment that specifies that parents have a fundamental right to exercise exclusive control over the care and custody and upbringing of the minor children. And this includes all decisions involving the discipline, education, religious instruction, health, medical care, place of habitation where you live, general well-being of the minor children. And the parents also have the right to choose to educate their children in public schools or private schools or home education and prepare them for the future obligations of life. That's the essence of the language here. And it's just unfortunate that we've come to a place where we've got to put this into a law in the Constitution. But here's where we are.
Okay, and you voted yes on that to move that along. And that is now has passed the House. It's over in the Senate. And what an HJR is, folks, is it's a proposed constitutional amendment, just like the United States government and its relationship with the states. The legislature in the state of Missouri merely proposes amendments. The legislature in the state of Missouri cannot amend the Constitution. Only you and I can do that. Thank God the Constitution still belongs to us, the people. The legislature proposes amendments, and then if that goes through, if you'll remember the prayer amendment of two sessions ago, it's going to be the same kind of thing. I haven't read it, Mike. Did you actually write? Because I don't believe you sponsored this one. But did they actually write the ballot language into this?
I don't know that the ballot language has, and some of them they are. And I
yes.
can take a quick gander here
that's
you're
all right.
Here,
I just,
but,
no.
But some of them are right at the end of it, and I. Yes, it says that. Here's what
Good.
The ballot language should read here. Shall the Missouri Constitution be amended to ensure that the parents have a fundamental right to control and direct the care, education, and upbringing of their minor children, and that the courts of law and law enforcement officers may act to protect the health, safety, and welfare of minor children? And that's crucial that that language is there because, you know, we have a Secretary of State who
Right.
takes liberties many times on making the language a little unclear and
Right.
maybe a lot unclear.
Or intentionally deceptive even. I remember several cases where the ballot language was written to be intentionally written to be deceptive. That's why I asked that question, and I'm glad to see that the ballot language was included as part of the bill, and I hope with that last debacle, and of course we've changed Secretary of State since, but I don't expect any different behavior. I'm hoping that the legislature takes more seriously in the future the idea that probably they should control the ballot language, especially for something as serious as a constitutional amendment in all cases.
You betcha.
So, anything else going on up there, Mike, before we take a quick break and come back and talk about some more casual stuff?
That is certainly serious stuff going on. And that's probably the most serious one. One of the things you might have heard, and perhaps we talked about this briefly the last time I was on, was with the oral cancer treatments. Did we discuss that?
No,
at
we didn't.
All?
No.
That bill was just signed into law just either yesterday or the day before. And, of course, I was one of the six, I believe, who voted against that. If you want to take time to talk about that after the break, I'd be glad to wait.
Okay.
Your choice.
No, let's do that now, because what I'd like to do is come back after the break and talk about some more, a little less government stuff and a little more personal stuff.
Okay, super. Well, this particular bill, essentially, if you could see me, this is tongue-in-cheek, with some quotations, level the playing field for those who have cancer. Now, of course, cancer is something not to be laughed at, and I'm not trying to belittle those who have cancer, but cancer treatments are expensive, and they're necessary. However, I believe in personal responsibility and, of course, freedom to determine which cancer treatment you want to undergo, and of course who provides it, and the medications, and all that sort of thing. In this particular bill, though, it was primarily dealing with oral cancer treatments, which, according to those I spoke with and those who argued in support of the bill, is less traumatic for some individuals, and so. It was sought, and a good thought. I don't have any problem with people wanting to be able to be treated with less side effects and less trauma, for example. But here's what happened. I was talking with some of the insurance guys about it and said, okay, what is the cost of this particular oral medication? They said, well, it's about $2,000 for each treatment or for one pill. If it comes in pill form. And so I said, and the other alternative is, or in this bill it says that you can have the treatment capped at $75 per treatment. And this is the question I've asked others with insurance questions. If you're paying $75 of a $2,000 treatment, who's picking up the tab for the rest?
Yep.
Well, it's those in that pool of insured. And so what they're essentially doing is guaranteeing someone to only pay $75 for something that costs about $2,000. It could be more or less a little bit there. But here's where the personal responsibility comes in. If I have cancer, and I believe, because of my relationship with the Lord, I believe that I'm going to die one day, whether I'm the healthiest man or the sickest man. One day I'm going to die. And I can spend all my money, if I choose to, on treatments to keep me alive. But the stark reality is that one day my heart's going to stop and I'm going to die.
Right.
When I choose to take those treatments, if I do that, is it the responsibility of those around me who have the same insurance coverage as I do to pay for my treatments if I can't afford them or choose not to afford them? I believe it's not. And so I don't dislike those who brought this bill forward. I don't dislike those who voted for it. I just think they're wrong because it's forcing others shouldn't have to pay for a treatment to pay for it. And so that's why I voted no. I didn't consult with the others who voted no yet, but I may talk to them and ask them what their reasoning was. But I think it's just a personal responsibility for each person to choose the coverage, to choose the options on care and treatment or not. And so that was my justification for it.
What's that bill number? Do you got right off the top of your head?
I do not, but I can
look
it up here.
No.
I want to say 688, but I'm not sure if that's
688. I'll find it. I'll find
yeah.
it. I'd like to look into that and talk about that a little bit more because I hadn't been following that. I didn't get it up before we came, and I would love to read it. I'm as you know, totally in agreement with everything you said. And we'll be talking about that one some more in the future. That is a House bill, so I'm guessing that it's on its way. No, you said that was signed into law.
Yes, it was. Just this week.
Okay. Quick break. We're going to come back and talk about some less serious but quite serious stuff.
Two cold climbs come springtime. So let me hear you say, my love, I'm gonna stand my ground. They rise to me, I'll blow them down. I am gonna stand my
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
Mike, it's not long till November, we need people to come out and see you and meet you. And do you have any appearances coming up?
Not anything on the immediate calendar, but we do have some folks in the county who are scoping out some venues and opportunities to speak to some groups here within Lawrence County.
Good.
So I'll hopefully have some to report in the near future.
Good, good. Yeah, you keep us posted on that. We want to get some people out there to meet you and know what's going on. You are going to have a primary challenger, is that right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Yeah, we've got to get moving on that, folks. This guy here is one of the good ones, and you folks down there in Lawrence County, do not miss a chance. How'd Lincoln Days go?
It went pretty well. We had at least 100 people there, and that was great for Lawrence County. Speaker Tim Jones was there, as well as Paul Kurtman. Both had opportunities to speak to the crowd, and it was, I thought, extremely well attended. It was a good night.
Good. So do you have the website set up, the Vote For Me website yet?
Vote for David Court?
No, you silly. I
didn't get that one up and running yet. Well, we do have Mike Moon for Missouri .com, and also I've been doing a little more on Facebook. You can look up Mike Moon for Missouri and like that page, and I try to link that with just the Mike Moon Facebook page as well. So I'm trying to do a little more there, so you can actively see what's going on in Jefferson City and around the county.
Great, and so we're going to keep people moving toward that, folks out there. Listen, I'm telling you right now, I don't care where you live in the state of Missouri, you folks in Lawrence County, you know Mike. I'm looking forward to another Mike Moon victory. I know you folks in Lawrence County know what kind of man this is. You folks out there in the rest of Missouri, you do not get a better guy. So, listen, go to Mike Moon. Let's see what Mike Moon for Missouri.com.
Yes,
go
sir.
To Mike Moon for Missouri.com and do something to get involved there. Let's see. Money helps, doesn't it?
It certainly does. And people have been extremely gracious. Just this week, two people gave money, and you know, that's probably the hardest thing for me to do is ask people for money.
I know it is.
And these guys, I didn't ask, so
yeah.
That made it even better.
Yeah,
but,
I know it is.
But
get yourself a good treasurer and a good campaign manager who will go out there and do that for you, Mike. Because I know you. I know it's hard to ask for cash, especially for something, you know. I'll tell you folks something about this guy here. He is absolutely hip deep involved in something that in and of itself leaves a bad taste in his mouth. I mean, politics is not something that most of us feel good about, you know, and going out and begging for money for politics is not something that sets well with most of us, including Mike. And so, you know, I am in awe at someone who can actually do this kind of job. And I'm talking about the kind of day in and day out job that Moon does in Jefferson City, in the environment that it's in. So you folks get out there, go to MikeMoonForMissouri.com, and nothing's too small, right? You don't send any checks back because they're too small, do you, Mike?
Well, I should say I have sent checks back. I made a pledge. This is a personal pledge that I would not accept lobbyist money. It's been kind of difficult because I've turned away thousands.
Yeah.
But the reason I did it is because whether they're good or bad, and there are good special interests and there are bad special interests. And I told each one that I really appreciate the honor they bestowed on me by thinking enough of me to give me money, but I can't accept it. Now, there's one thing that I always add in it. If, though, your members want to give individually, I will gladly accept their money. Haven't gotten any yet from the members of the group. I'm not sure how far down the line that's being spread. But in any case, I have turned away money, sent it back, and man, when I'm sending it back in the mail, I think, wow, I could use that. But anyway, I think that Lord's going to take care of us. If he wants me back in Jefferson City, I'll be there. If not, there's something else that he'll have for me to do. But I feel pretty confident about this. I think that we can win, but it's going to take a lot of people getting out to vote. And unfortunately, in these primaries, there aren't a lot of people who come out. We had a huge turnout for the special election last April, about 25%, 28% maybe.
Wow, that is big.
It's projected that there could be about 30% for the August primary. Still, though, there's 70% who stay home.
Right.
And since we're a 60-40 Republican-dominated county, we can tap into that extra 70% who may not vote regularly. We'll win it, but we've got to do that because my opponent is a female. She'll get some female votes just because she's a cancer survivor, and so there'll be some sympathy votes perhaps, and she's a retired school teacher, and so there'll be some school personnel who just because she's one of them will vote for her. But I think we need to dig down deep and find out why she's running, and that I haven't found out yet. I haven't had any calls returned that I've placed, and so that's something we're going to have to dig deep. And it's kind of funny with this. If I'm the one who asked, it makes me look like I'm evil, and so I can't ask. But hopefully someone will, and we'll get to the bottom of it. I think that there are some underlying reasons for her being in the race, and maybe they'll come to light in time for the voters to be educated and know exactly what's behind her for being on the ballot.
Exactly. And you and I discussed that once before. I can see that. I can see that being so. All right. I'm not going to overstay your welcome. I know you've got things that you've got to do. I know you've got a family. You get very little time at home. So I want to thank you very much for being with us. And we're going to look forward to the next time you're back. Next time you're back, let's talk about right to work. You want to do that?
I'd be glad to.
Okay.
David, thank you very much for allowing me to be on.
Hey, thank you, Mike. I appreciate it more than you know. Have a great night.
And you too. Good night to you.
Good night, buddy. All right. That was Mike Moon, representative from Lawrence County up there in Jefferson City, Missouri. What a guy. What a guy. He tells it like it is, and agree with him or don't, you're going to get the truth out of him when he tells you why he did something or why he's going to do something. Your action items from this discussion are to get on the phone Monday morning with Speaker Jones' office. If you didn't have your pencil when we did this before, grab it now. Speaker Jones' office is 573-751-0562. You also need to go to house.mo.gov and find your representative, find out what their number is, and call them and tell them. The message to both Speaker Jones and to your representative is get H.R. 476. That's the article of impeachment against the governor for failing to call elections to get some representation for these people who have had no representation in Jefferson City for a year now. The way that works is when a seat vacates, the governor is constitutionally mandated to call a special election and get that seat filled so that those people have representation. He has failed to do that. He has intentionally and willfully left those folks without representation. And he's done so that he could tilt the balance of power in the House of Representatives and in the legislature as a whole. You'd also need to tell them that you'd like to see H.R. 380 get moving, assigned to committee, brand new H.R. 923, both also articles of impeachment, one by Marshall on the joint tax returns for gay folks. And look, I want to say something about this for a moment, because I wish I'd have thought of this while Mike was on, because I'd like to know why this hasn't been done. And I don't follow every bill that's introduced. It may have been done. But it seems to me that Missouri law, I don't mean to preface this with "it seems to me," it's a fact. Missouri law requires that if you file a joint federal return, you have to file a joint state return. It seems to me there's a dichotomy there. Missouri doesn't recognize gay marriage, but why hasn't someone in the Republican/conservative legislature proposed a change to that law? I mean, it seems to me that that the only leg the governor's got to stand on with his executive order is that if they file a joint federal return, they're required to file a joint state return. So what we need to do is we need to unhook those two and allow people who file a joint. I understand somebody's going to have to actually do some work and get out and figure out how that rule's going to work. But anyway, that's Marshall. That's H.R. 380. And then I'll be listening tomorrow morning to Matt Kenobi's show to hear how he feels about H.R. 923, Bratton's introduction in the last week of the session of an article of impeachment against the governor for failing to act properly and within his constitutional duties with the Real ID Enforcement Act, Act Enforcement, and the way the Department of Revenue and the Highway Patrol handled those lists of users, concealed carry permit holders. So that's it. House.mo.gov on those three. Get a hold of the speaker. The speaker has the power to send this to a committee and get a hold of your representative at house.mo.gov and let them know. 476-380-923 need to move into committee. That would move them into the General Laws Committee, where I believe Caleb Jones would act right on this. And SAPA gets a third read tomorrow, or Monday, actually, day after tomorrow. Actually, 2 days after tomorrow. I've lost track of what day it is here. Take a quick break. I've got to wet my whistle, and we're going to come back. We're going to talk about a couple more things, and then we're going to call it a night.
No matter what time of year it is, it's never too early to start preparing for the holidays. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we're thinking of Christmas now. Why? Because we've set an ambitious goal for ourselves to raise $2,000. That's right. We want to raise $2,000 in 2013 to help some Missouri families who may be struggling in this Obama economy to provide a magical Christmas morning for their children. Last year, in 2012, Missouri Grassroots Coalition touched the lives of 15 families because of the generosity of conservatives across the state who provided us with the means to pay off their layaway accounts on Christmas Eve. This year, we'd like to be able to help twice that number of families, and we're asking you to help us with that goal. Please go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa tab. All the details are there for you to send us what you can by PayPal, check, or money order. We want to thank all who contributed last year for their generosity and hope that you will all help us continue to prove that charitable giving works best in a constitutional republic.
I'm Dave. This is Missouri Grassroots Radio. You're on the Hour of Truth. Okay, the earlier promo we had, I wanna flash back to nobody here in the station. Not myself, not Lisa, not Cynthia, not anyone who works with us gets compensated for anything. But we've got to have some sponsors. It costs money to put this show on. It's not much. You can imagine that if you can imagine a mere pittance to get your message out there, and I'm talking nickels and dimes per show will get you promoted, you and your business promoted on every show we do. And help us pay just for the airtime. That's all there is. That's all there is to pay for, just the airtime. We buy our own equipment. We don't get compensated. We buy our own iced tea or whatever it is we're going to drink to keep our voices soft and palatable while we talk to you folks. We don't pay any guests. We don't pay any visitors. And speaking of money, we don't collect money for anything. We don't ask for any donations. The members of the executive committee and the active members of Missouri Grassroots Coalition print up any pamphlets or flyers on their own printers at home with paper that they bought, spend their own gas money when they go to meetings and to do MGC business. Again, nobody at MGC gets compensated. So that I say that because I want you to understand that when you get involved in the only one thing we do ask for money for, and that is the Secret Santa, that every dime you donate goes directly to Secret Santa. There's zero overhead, zero. We don't pay for advertising. We don't pay for anything. We don't pay for disbursement. We take care of all that ourselves. Every dime that's in the bank on Christmas Eve gets spent on these gifts, and every dime that you've sent in is in the bank on Christmas Eve. There is no cost involved in this. We talk all the time as conservatives about how we don't need the nanny state, how we don't need the government to take care of people, how people ought to take care of one another rather than relying on the government. Well, that's what Secret Santa is all about. It's MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. Click on the Secret Santa button in the top menu. And then just use PayPal to send us a couple of bucks. We try to collect money all year long. because it is so painful for us and for you when we have to come begging for money in November and December, the worst time of the year for us to beg and the worst time of the year for you to pay. So at your convenience, go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, click on the Secret Santa button, use PayPal to send us whatever you can afford. I'll be back tomorrow night. Tomorrow night we're going to talk at length about voter ID. Some interesting things going on there in some studies about this voter fraud. What you hear all the time, of course, is, well, it's a solution to a non-problem. There's no voter fraud. No one's ever proved there's voter fraud. Oh, contraire, there is voter fraud. We're going to talk about the many proven cases of voter fraud. And then we're going to talk about how voter ID takes care of that and why it should take care of that. We're going to go on again tomorrow, and we're going to talk a little bit more about Convention of the States. We're going to talk about the Missouri legislation that's moving through on Convention of the States. We're going to talk about the overall status of Convention of the States. And then we're going to move into the third most important amendment of the three important amendments that need to come out of the Convention of the States. And this will be a mini-part series, but we're going to talk about the fair tax. I'm not the only person who talks here. On Tuesday nights, Cynthia Davis comes along, and she has a show called Homefront. She always has dynamic guests. On Wednesday night, Lisa Payne Nager comes along, and she has a show called Culture Vigilante, and she has great guests. I'm hoping to get both those ladies on this show in the near future to promote their own shows and to talk with us. Of course, that night I'll kind of be the orphan child, so I'll be out by myself on most discussions. That's pretty much a wrap for tonight. That takes care of the Secret Santa. That takes care of tonight's guest, Mike Moon. Thank you very, very much, Mike. And it takes care of the shows for the rest of the week. I want to wish you a great week. We're going to cut it a little short tonight because I've been out of bed, unfortunately, since 6 o'clock yesterday morning. And I'm a little tired. We'll give you the full 2 hours tomorrow night. And I will talk to you then.
There are so many contradictions in all these messages we send. How do I get out?